to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Happy June, Alini. It's finally feeling like summer. And it's also Tony season. The award show is just on. And you and I spent time on Broadway this week. It was so fun to see Boop the musical.
It was so much fun for anyone who's a fan of Broadway and just like the spectacular that Broadway puts on. Incredible production. We were obsessed with the lighting and the animation. I won't even reveal all the costume magic that happened. It was so worth the view.
I could spend probably an hour and a half talking about this show, so I'll stop talking. Just go see it. But we'll refocus on the topic at hand. Today on the show, we have two amazing wellness leaders. And let's just do a little walk down memory lane at Base Beauty with some of our past wellness clients.
Yeah, absolutely. For our returning listeners at Base Beauty Creative Agency, we have a total focus on beauty, wellness, and personal care. And we are going to be launching on LinkedIn soon a little case study with Viviscal Pro. We had a big idea to flip the script on hair loss from insecurity to inspiration.
Yeah, this was a really great program. We did a lot of research with the pro hair community, and the relationship between stylist and client is so sensitive and so important and really very intimate. So we really needed to find different ways for a stylist to make a recommendation to their client in a way that can be well received, right? If you're sitting in someone's chair and they say, oh, your hair is thinning, you might never come back. Mm-hmm. Right? It might feel like a big offense. So lots of really great work in that case study.
Yeah, look out for that. Wellness is the hot topic right now. Tell us some of your dream wellness clients, Jodi.
Okay, so I'm pretty obsessed with Sakara Life. I actually have a package arriving on Sunday to start out the system. Dry water is so interesting to me. The CEO of this is a guest on our show on our second quarter, so you'll hear from him soon when that episode launches. And I was just in the room with the head of marketing at Body Armor, and I thought, wow, this brand is so interesting. Like a simple modification to sports drinks from removing artificial colors and flavors. What a win.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a great conversation to be part of. Tell us more about who we have on the show today.
Right. So talking about Broadway at the start of this conversation, we have Liz Joseph Burke. She's the CEO and founder of Target 100 Inc. And she is a real leader in the weight loss industry. But interestingly, she was a Broadway star as her first act and had really, you know, incredible roles in Les Miserables, Showboat. And the conversation here about her struggles with weight loss and how it led her into this career is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. She shares all about her experience at Weight Watchers. She started from the most junior position in the company and worked her way up to a top executive role. And you'll hear a lot about her work with VIP celebrity clients, Jennifer Hudson, Jessica Simpson, Katie Couric, Charles Barkley, so many before she developed her own company and focused on weight loss and behavior modification.
And in the seat next to Liz was Sarah Pesky. She's the COO of Radiance, which is a new health tech startup. I met Sarah years ago. This woman is the authority on longevity and taking the world of medicine that we've known for hundreds of years and meshing it with data and giving a little bit more power and authority to the patient. So really fascinating woman. And the combination of the two of these women together was magical. But Radiance is like going to be setting the stage for what medicine looks like in the future for us. I can't wait for that business to launch.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. And for anybody listening in, it's so cool to see, you know, one of the big themes of our show is connection. You'll see these two guests on the show really create a connection. And who knows, maybe they'll collaborate in the future. So let's get into our episode. Let's hear more from Liz Josephsberg and Sarah Pesky in episode 286.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. Today, we are diving into the idea of sick care versus well care, really hot topic. I'm here with Liz Josephsberg, CEO and founder of Target 100. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
And Sarah Pesky, CEO of Radiance.
Yes.
Nice to see you.
You too.
So I want to let the audience know how we all know each other. So you and I met at a longevity conference in Southern California a few years ago, and I was like so magnetically drawn to you. You are so incredible to listen to, and you're such an expert in this longevity space. I'm so grateful that I was at that session. It was incredible.
I felt the same way. It was like electric. We connected. It was a great conference, a lot of, you know, interesting topics, talking about the future of longevity and some of the cutting edge technology in that space. And we immediately connected and have been friends ever since.
And you've invited me to so many really interesting events. So I'm so glad that you could be on the show today.
No, it's my pleasure. I'm thrilled to be here.
And Liz, our story is a little different. Our boys were in elementary school together. We live in the same town. And when you're a parent on the playground at pickup time, you don't know that the other parents have cool, interesting jobs. So I didn't learn this about you until literally a minute ago. And I'm so glad that we can talk about your career and what a fascinating ride you've had.
Great. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Okay, so we're going to go back in time. It's a career journey show. We're going to start with our ideals and our ideas and vision of what our career would be when we were little kids. So Sarah, we'll start with you. When you're like 10, 11 years old, what did you want to be when you grow up?
I think originally I thought I wanted to be an engineer. And it to me, it makes so much sense on where I am right now, mm-hmm. currently. But loved that concept of learning all of the different mechanics, how things work, how to build things. And eventually I went on to nursing school, which I, you know, was very much obsessed with, like, health and wellness. I loved sports as a child, always super physically active. I thought nursing was a nice blend of my, you know, I'm an extrovert, obviously. I like to talk to people, connect to people. So it allowed me to do that, but then also lean into, like, the science side of nursing. Eventually, I don't know if you want me to go further into my career.
Well,
just
go
kind
for
of
it.
Like, all right, we're going to go for it. So, love nursing, immediately came out and started to, work in cardiology. Most importantly, I just was obsessed with the heart. You know, again, the structure of it, the way that it works in our body, the connection to health and wellness. And as I was, immediately out working, realized that, you know, most of the things that happened to people I was managing were very old. It was preventative, but they just maybe didn't have the context to understand that and make that connection. So immediately went back to school to get another degree. Part of it was really because I wanted to have a bigger impact on my patients' lives. And like most things, you need to have more education in order to do that. It provides you a great platform. And also in my mind, a lot of concepts are very complex and it gives you the tools to contextualize it so you can communicate better to, you know, in my case, it was the patients. I absolutely loved being a nurse practitioner. I felt like I had an amazing impact in my patients' lives. But as I progressed in my career, I thought, you know, I've always been a little bit restless and I kind of didn't realize like what that was. And as I grew and learned more about myself, I came to realize I'm a builder at heart and maybe that's how it ties back to engineering, but it just felt very natural to me. So went on for an additional degree. During that time, I started to take on a lot of different responsibilities at the hospital I was at, where I was not only building programs, maybe from a very high level of thinking of the strategy and the operations behind it, but also the actual physical construction. So for me, a typical day would be wearing a hard hat, walking around a construction site while we're building a program, and then answering a phone and talking to a patient about that they were in rapid AFib and that we needed to manage that. And then pivoting later on to saying, like, we're triaging you, we're sending you to the emergency room. And I realized I love that. I love that experience of being able to connect and be busy that way. And it made me realize eventually I wanted to actually hang up my nursing cap and to actually continue on in purely operations. So
I'm going to pause you there because that takes us actually very close to engineering. So Liz, your story is a little different. Yeah. Tell me what you wanted to be as a little kid.
Well, I wanted to be an actress. And so and now singer, really. And started singing at a young age. And I'll mention, I had a weight issue starting very young. Starting at 14, I was already being put into diet centers for a weight issue that I had. I started singing and it just naturally rolled. I got into college. It just kept happening. I got a master's degree in opera. And halfway through that master's degree, was found myself auditioning for a Showboat in front of Harold Prince, like on Broadway, was cast the next day.
In college?
In my master's degree. And all of a sudden I was on Broadway doing Les Miserables and all of these Broadway musicals, traveling the country, and my weight issue persisted. Mm-hmm. I would gain 30 to 40 pounds very quickly. I do remember actually auditioning for Les Mis. I was in a really good spot with my weight. I was working out. And I would always help everyone in the cast. in the cast, excuse me, work out. Like, I was already kind of going into this trainer mode, this helper mode, of, like, helping other people while I was helping myself. So I remember auditioning for Les Mis. I was in such fit shape. I was just feeling really good, and I didn't hear anything. I auditioned for Cosette, and I didn't hear anything. And I finished off with Showboat. I did some operetta, and all of a sudden I get a phone call. Will you come out and be Cosette in 4 weeks? I was 35 pounds heavier than when they'd seen me.
In just a few weeks?
And they said 4 weeks. So I went into this dramatic weight loss mode. I did dramatic, crazy diets my whole life. I tell this story because I ended up as a professional actress for about 10, 12 years. And when I decided to leave, I had met my husband in Les Mis. He was Marius, I was Cosette. Yes, we fell in love. And we decided to get married. And I was like, I really don't want to do this anymore. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. But so I left acting, and suddenly no one was looking at me anymore. So I gained a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. I ended up going to Weight Watchers to lose the weight, and it changed my life. Because I sat in a room with other people, mainly women, to be honest, who were expressing the same thoughts and feelings and emotions that I had only known to be my own private shame. Mm-hmm. And so I stayed there, I lost the weight, and I got a job at the lowest level of the company. I literally was the lady who weighed people in when they came in the door, and I loved it. And so I built my career from there. I spent 11 years there and worked my way up from that lady who weighed you in to the top of the company. I was an executive there. They made up a role for me called the Director of Brand Advocacy. My main job was to write the weight loss programs. I played a role on the science team. And then their CEO at the time needed to lose weight. I helped him lose 40 pounds.
How interesting.
Yes. And he said to me, Liz, what you did for me was so special, because I knew he was the CEO. I created an entire Black Ops level of Weight Watchers for him. So he said, basically, Liz, go do this for celebrities.
Wait, why couldn't he be out in public as a...
He just, his life wouldn't allow the travel alone. So I would come in early. I would weigh mm-hmm. him in. I had special products for him. I did 24/7. He could call me, text me, anything that he needed. And he's like, listen, Katie Couric just called. She wants to do Weight Watchers. Go to Katie's house and do for her what you did for me. Mm-hmm. And so this turned into this crazy career that I was flying around helping Jennifer Hudson, Jessica Simpson, Charles Barkley, Katie Couric, Al Roker, you name it. It was my job to take mm-hmm. care of those people and then help write the marketing campaigns that came from those weight loss journeys. Found myself just, you know, in the middle of this incredible, I wrote two books for them and loved every minute of them, of working with them. I stayed there 11 years. And then I said, you know what? I was being approached by a whole bunch of companies to come and write programs for them, to do television programs. People are like, what an interesting life. We want to follow you while you do all of this. We want to, and I was like, wow, I've become a Weight Watchers expert, but my heart and soul is to help people. So I wanted to become a weight loss industry mm-hmm. expert. Mm-hmm. So I ended up stepping out of Weight Watchers and starting my own company, and then literally working around the world in anything I could do in weight loss, from build technology to help bring innovative devices like breath analysis technology to the forefront, to being a speaker at CES about what's occurring in the weight loss industry. And then I wrote Target 100, the book that is in your bags, mm-hmm. as my love letter to anyone who's going, truly my love letter. I wanted it to be the joy of cooking for weight loss.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
That you would want to give it to your kid because it's so nonsensical, right? It's so like sensical mm-hmm. in all the nonsensical that occurs in weight loss. It's just the honest truth about behavior modification, the science behind it, the emotional and the behavioral techniques that are going to help you so much more. I always say no woman has ever come to me and said she doesn't know that an apple is a better choice than a Snickers bar. Yes. If it was about that, we'd all be fine. But it's the gap between the action and the intention. So
okay, I'm going to pause you there. This is like what's so exciting to me about this pairing of the two of you is you're both scientists and you both really care about people. Like yeah. you're literally like dedicated your careers to helping people and giving them the resources and information they need, right? Because this is really the challenge, right? When I met you, Sarah, you're like, people don't know what's happening inside their body. They don't understand their blood. They don't understand their hormones, right? And you're trying to open the door to this understanding. So I'm excited about this pairing. I feel like you guys are going to do my job for me in a minute.
And then we met in our pre-interview mm-hmm. and have since had a call. Yes. And we're now, so this show is all about connection. I feel the same way mm-hmm. about Sarah. So
let's dig in, okay? These careers are fascinating and you have much more work to do, right? This is, even though you've been doing this for decades, you're really kind of right at the beginning in a sense, right?
Oh, absolutely. Feel like 100%. We're just beginning.
Right. Yes. So Sarah, we'll start with you in this idea of longevity and like helping to inform people and giving them access to the information. Like, what do you see coming? Like, what are we, like, what's right over the edge for us as, you know, human beings moving through the world? What are we going to be walking to that helps us do this better?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes with, you know, in the beginning, it's like, if you don't measure it, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So for me, originally, that journey was the lab that we created, mm-hmm. where you spend 1 hour, we give you a comprehensive assessment, a digital twin of yourself. Mm-hmm. Because we feel like if you don't really have that baseline, then how are you really going to change anything? So it started with that. And what I'm kind of seeing in the landscape now is like that movement is only growing. And you and I talked about this, Liz, that a lot of it is kind of distilling out the noise mm-hmm. because there's a lot of signals being thrown to us. So people are looking for subject matter experts. I like that we're looking for like a scientific evidence-based approach behind in this whole space of longevity, prevention, wellness. I think that's what's going to rise to the top. And Liz, you know, as you mentioned at Weight Watchers, like they're backed in it's a big science team to make these different programs. I'm seeing that now that that's what's rising to the top. And it's becoming more complicated because when you go to have these types of screening assessments and it's multimodal, it's multi-omic, if you're not familiar with those terms, it's really that we're looking at, you know, your blood, your saliva, your stool, imaging, surveys, phenotypic information connected to wearables, the way you live and breathe in your environment. I love the saying that your zip code is a pretty big determinant. It's more probably predictive than your DNA code because your DNA is really, that science is very new. It is sophisticated, but they are just scratching the surface on what takes these specific genes and triggers and turns them on. So that is what I'm seeing in the landscape is a lot. Mm-hmm. But one of the big trends is that science, I think, is going to trump and lead the market. And mm-hmm. people are going to stop maybe always being persuaded by influencers, no offense, but to really people who are deep in the science and looking at large clinical trials and saying like, this is the evidence, this is what you should be doing.
And what are you seeing as the future in helping us understand our bodies?
We're so aligned. So out of the book Target 100, I built a app and a platform that pulls together three wearable device, not wearables. One's a wearable that measures sleep, steps, you know, exercise. One measures your water intake, your hydration, that how many ounces you've had, how much more you should have, triggers you to drink more water. And the third is a biometric scale that measures body fat, lean mass, bone mass, all of the things that are so much more important than weight. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm in the same boat, is that data and being able to look at where you are. So the way that we work and the way that I think you're going to see weight loss go forward, especially in this crazy time of GLP-1s being brought to the market, and we could do a whole show on that, mm-hmm. you know, but the most important thing is to know where you are. Even if you decide that a GLP-1 is the way that you want to go, you need to start by looking at your bone density and mm-hmm. your lean mass mm-hmm. because those are being decimated by these medications. So, you know, getting yourself to the core pieces of what is occurring for you is going to be very, very important. I also think you're talking environment. We now know that the weight issues that we have are all driven by environment. There was no weight issue in 1975. Mm-hmm. We didn't change our DNA between mm-hmm. 1975 and 2025. It's not possible. Mm-hmm. So something else had to change. And that is our food supply. That is our air quality. That is our lack of movement. That is our confusion by this world where information is so available that you can turn something on and someone sounds so knowledgeable, but yet they really don't have any knowledge and they're selling something to you and you don't even know that. So we see something that I call in my world diet confusion, mm-hmm. where people get so much incoming advice and so they do nothing. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think we're so aligned.
No, or they do the wrong thing. Like, yeah. There's so much knowledge, but it's all the wrong knowledge. So, like, I love that you're talking about the bioelectrical impedance.
Yes.
Because
okay,
I
wait,
just,
define that, please.
So, yeah. You know, it's I'm going to say there's a scale that looks at the way that your body is composed in terms of, like, visceral fat, mm-hmm. skeletal muscle, some of them bone density, and, you know, fat overall, just general fat. And that's a very simplified way of kind of describing things. But I think what most people don't realize, like when I was growing up, you just had a scale.
Yeah.
And that scale probably dictated your mood. And and it's terrible because people kind of get caught in this loop of being on this scale. And it's just like one data point, but it's like a bad data point. Mm-hmm. And when you go on to maybe a bioelectrical impedance scale or do some type of like a body composition, and it really kind of breaks down your fat of muscle to, you know, skeletal muscle to fat ratio. It's powerful because I think it helps people to start to realize, like, if I stay on this exercise and start to eat better, like the scale might not move. It mm-hmm. might still be the right. same weight, but these percentages are shifting. And then you have this like high tech and high touch and like a little micro nudge of like, I should stay the course. My body is changing. Mm-hmm. It's becoming healthier. And like that part of like new innovations is what I love mm-hmm. because a lot of people just give up.
Yeah.
Right.
And this part of like prevention, longevity, you know, as much as I probably don't love all of the stuff that's out there, I do love that like there are some better devices. And to me, the importance is like contextualizing information. I just think it's really hard for people sometimes to make changes because they just don't understand.
Yeah. Well,
and there's been good movement.
You're touching on such an important piece. I sort of talked about these mental, emotional, and behavioral techniques that are so much more important mm-hmm. than knowing what we have ChatGPT. You want to know what to eat, guys? Mm-hmm. Ask it for a healthy breakfast. Ask it. It will tell you what to do. And it's pretty good. Like it's, but what we have learned from technology and from brain scanning and MRIs is that there are so many thoughts, feelings, and emotions that occur just from stepping on a scale.
Yes.
And with the wrong knowledge, when you step on that scale, with you will have what we see, guilt and shame, and they mm-hmm. activate a brain piece called the reward center. So once you get feeling badly about a choice or a decision, maybe you ate too much at the party, or, you know, I always tell the story of when I was weighing people in at Weight Watchers, they'd come and they'd say, oh, I had such a great week and I was doing so well and I had like 32 extra points left. I went to a party, I ate 34 extra mm-hmm. points, and then I went home and I ate for the rest of the weekend. Mm-hmm. I ate everything. Mm-hmm. Why did I do that? Mm-hmm. And I was just this girl like, oh, I don't know. And so I started studying brain science and guilt and shame. Now we can see it light up the reward center. So when we have a data point that's creating guilt and shame, or these new opportunities to create knowledge of your actual body instead, and learning how to actually do some cognitive, behavioral, mental, and emotional skills of not giving up, of understanding what's occurring for you, they keep you in the game, which mm-hmm. is what I've seen. I've helped people lose hundreds of pounds. I have lost, my biggest was 65. I did 50. I did 35 times. I've lost hundreds of pounds, helped people lose hundreds of pounds. The only difference between the person who does and the person who doesn't is that they stay in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can figure out the skills and they're not about food mm-hmm. to stay in a game, you're fine.
So as somebody who, I have a functional medicine doctor now, I have a nutritionist who specializes in the menopause time of life. I have a lot of other people. Like, it takes a lot to understand what's going on. And I have the means and the time, right? And I still don't necessarily, you know, it's not like on autopilot that I do everything right or right. So it all just feels really confusing. Like, if my functional medicine doctor wasn't running all these labs, the nutritionist wouldn't know where all the bits and pieces are, and she wouldn't be able to inform me accurately. So it takes like this army of experts that I pay, you know, full price for to get to an understanding. Why is it so complicated? Mm-hmm. Like, why is it so hard?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really big question and a tough question. I mean, part of it is healthcare is very fragmented. Mm-hmm. And that those systems by design are not interoperable. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's hard for people to even share their electronic medical record mm-hmm. data. I feel like healthcare is very local, and sometimes healthcare, the system, puts a lot of roadblocks up for people to get access. It's why I really want to focus, like, I find what I'm most passionate about is the screening part mm-hmm. of it, because I see this disconnected, fragmented system. And for me, before you even get into like the treatment or counseling, it starts with like the baseline assessment. Mm-hmm. And most people can't get any access to it. Right. It would take a lot. It takes a long time to get an appointment. And I get if you have disposable means, you can do that. But there's a lot of people that don't. So how do we do that? And I think we have to kind of like double down and lean into like software solutions. We have to reimagine the way that we're interacting with the healthcare system. Like, I very often think about like when you have a child, you take them to that appointment every year, mm-hmm. you get that head circumference and that weight, and you love that chart. Mm-hmm. And you're obsessed with it, how they do on the population distribution. And then all of a sudden they turn 18 and nobody goes for a primary right. care visit. So it's like on a very national level, we need to reframe that idea of our experience and interaction with health and wellness. And then at a local system level, we have to support that for people. And a lot of that is going to have to be with innovation, reimagining, like, why if I can order a Starbucks latte, like, why can't I get an appointment that quickly? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the incentives are not aligned, but I feel like they're shifting. Yes. They're changing. And also, it's a national crisis now. Mm-hmm. We have a national practitioner shortage. So there are healthcare deserts in the United States. So I don't think that we can, and people are just sicker younger. Mm-hmm. You know, there's more cancer in younger people. So in a way, they're actually helping drive. Younger people are really helping the movement. Mm-hmm. I love the social wellness clubs. Mm-hmm. They're more likely to spend money on health and wellness than, you know, they're not drinking as much, and that's great. So they're almost like forcing the country to start to pivot and say, like, we have to start really reimagining this experience and doing it differently.
Mm-hmm. So are we in this complicated crisis? Like, why isn't this easy? Why wasn't I taught this as a kid? Mm-hmm. Because this is all just so new because of our food supply, because of our air, because of our water and all that.
And because we can now see inside of the body in right. ways and look at blood supply in ways that we never could before, right? So I think it's almost like it's booming. It's mm-hmm. blossoming so fast because of technology and science. I also think, you know, we have, and I was laughing, we were chatting on the phone and I was like, yeah, I called in January for my yearly checkup and they said, you can come in July yes. of 2026.
Stop. I couldn't believe this. Yes.
This really? Is like my yes. local practitioner that I've been going to for years. So she's exactly right. There is a crisis if you can't see your primary. So I had to bypass all of that. And I was like, okay, I'll go to my OBGYN and get my mammogram through right. her. And I got like all of this stuff, blood tests done through her. Mm-hmm. Like I had to make it up. And you'd probably look at my zip code and say, hey, you know, I'm guessing those folks are fairly well taken care of.
I think we're in a really rocky road right now, but mm-hmm. I'm optimistic about the future. Because yeah. I think for the first time, we're seeing like every different sector saying like, it's not working. We need yes. to reimagine it. We're mm-hmm. going to change this. So like all the forces are combining. So yeah. I'm optimistic that it could change.
I'm with you. I think there's also a crisis in explaining things.
Yes, contextualizing like, information.
Contextualizing things and making it easy to understand and having it be something that you're not going home going like, I don't have any idea what they just said to me or what the actual action items are for right. me.
Don't most people leave the doctor confused?
Yes. Totally confused. But they're embarrassed to ask right. what that actually means. And so they sort of sit and nod, we know this. So I think that in my world of program design, that's where I'd like to see my career go is in helping, because that's my superpower, mm-hmm. is helping make very difficult things very accessible to you and make a checklist and come out, you know.
You know, that's what Sarah does too.
Yeah, totally. That's why I think we're so into it.
And definitely like in the lab when we built that technology, that was one of the resounding themes. Mm-hmm. And we scripted and had some videos because we kept thinking to ourselves, like, what would this be like in a doctorless society? Mm-hmm. Could people actually automatically take them through themselves through a wellness visit? Mm-hmm. And you're starting to see people do that. And it might not be a perfect solution, but in my mind, it's better than what's currently out there because it creates a funnel. Yeah. We can quickly identify people that need to be rapidly seen within the next 3 months, mm-hmm. 6 months, 9 months, 12 mm-hmm. months. So like, yes, maybe you're a healthy individual and they're going to say, you're not going to get your primary visit. tested until July, but there's somebody else there that absolutely probably needs to be seen within the next few weeks. And very simple things like really leaning into technology to make a visually beautiful experience. We do that in beauty. Yeah. That's why we love it. And we do it in, like, you know, to other technology. We don't really do that in healthcare. Right. So I know that I think of, you know, you can YouTube video and teach yourself anything. So we thought when we're in healthcare, why don't we do that on some of the scripting and the experience so people really understood, like, this is how my body works. And actually, to our surprise, like, our net promoter score was 93. That's unheard of. People were like, I love a mini anatomy and physiology lesson. People love a personalized experience. They it's in a beautiful system. That's what, and they want to learn about it.
So I paused you in your career when you took me through to this longevity conversation and wellness, right, versus sickness, right, focusing on the wellness side. How does this work advance in Radiance?
Sure. So that is a new company that I'm at, and we're in a stealth mode, so can't give away too much. But I will definitely, you know, distill it down to us really doubling down on the preventative screening aspect. The technology and science is advancing every day, and science never sleeps, and neither do we at Radiance. So we really want to curate the best in tests, and but we're doing it with a heavy-hitting science team, making sure all the evidence base is behind it. I like to think that we first kind of decode. We try to figure out the most about the individual that we're going to work with. It's going to be a membership. Then we design a very personalized experience, and then we deliver. We execute and make sure that that happens for you, but where you live. And so there, it's a little bit of a hybrid aspect, but also we'll have a brick and mortar space as well.
So, but what's interesting about both of you is you're always in the place where the innovation's happening, right? Like the time you're at Weight Watchers, like the mega time of this company, right?
Yes.
I'm sure it was at Les Mis as well. And, like, you know, all the stops in your journey was like where it's happening. How do you sniff that out? How do you know when, like, these moments are happening? Or is it more of a retrospective, like, oh, wow, that's cool that I was there?
For me, it's being a woman in it. Like, I am 65 pounds down. I'm now postmenopausal, I guess you'd call it. And so I've gone through a couple of baby weight losses. I've now gone through perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. I've, by being actually the consumer myself, and talking to women all day long, you know, mainly about what it is that's occurring for them, I think I can, all of a sudden I'm going, okay, you know, what I find interesting right now is the usage of AI. So we built Target 100, and now we're trying to build what we call Liz in Your Pocket, because right, what I did for celebrities, I could do using AI and the devices that we've given to people to say, hey, I notice it's Tuesday, it's 4:30, you're at like 3,000 steps, let's do something about that. And hey, it looks like you're working late tonight, so let's think about three places you could stop on your way home to pick up a healthy meal. Like, all of that can be done. And that's what I did. They would text me and say, hey, we just landed in LA and I'm really starving, what should I do? I'd be like, okay, room service at the hotel, do this. Right? So that was my job. So using this incredible kind of, and that's where I'm now, like, going, okay, wait, we could really help. Like I said, ChatGPT, guys, you don't need me anymore. Like, you don't need me to tell you what to eat. Like, that's the last thing you need me for. But you do need me when you get on the scale, it goes in the wrong direction, you're feeling terribly, and you're thinking it's not working, and you go, Liz, I'm feeling this way. And I go, girl, you're doing amazing. Like, look at what you went and you exercised this morning. Like, it's the emotional support that I think is there. So I think it's about being on the ground, for me, I'll just answer for myself, is being on the ground as the consumer herself, looking at what are the challenges that I'm hearing from my groups.
Sarah, what about you? You were, you know, in the hospital with patients. You are obviously noticed something, you know, and you followed it. How'd you know where to be in that moment?
Yeah, I mean, I love information. I am obsessed. I, you know, typical day for me is like, to me, reading the New England Journal of Medicine is just as important as like TMZ and People magazine. It's like, it's on the same level. So I love kind of seeing the trends, what's new, what's emerging in science and technology. But at the root of that is because I want to be able to provide that maybe information to a patient or a customer or a member, and seeing the impact of that at Mount Sinai. You know, when you see that a great, amazing physician took care of somebody that maybe was misdiagnosed somewhere else or, you know, heard about this physician and traveled there and then eventually like had that life-saving surgery or that procedure, you just realize like life is fragile and sometimes just access to information can change your life immediately. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I want to share that with people so that if that can make them be healthier or make a better decision, then why shouldn't we democratize healthcare and let other people have it, you know, access to that information as well?
Okay, so like in this moment of time, I'll speak for myself. I live in like I'm armed with a lot of experts. I still am confused, or I still make these decisions where I'm like, why did I do that? Right. I don't, you know, the doctor runs my blood and she tells me about my estrogen, this, that, whatever, whatever. I don't understand it. How many years are we away from like all this being simpler, easier to understand, where like I can be a little more on autopilot and not so like, you know, focused in on trying to understand all these puzzle pieces?
I think there are groups. I mean, even I think you were at the Not Your Mother's Menopause, yeah, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. There are groups that are emerging, like Alloy Health and a couple of others that are really starting to put together some really interesting stuff. I think we're probably a good 5 years to 10 years away from this being something where you're like, oh, wow, that's such an easy experience. Mm-hmm. I think the push is on. It has picked up really, really exponentially in the last, I'd say, 2 years have been big, really, really big. Unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of funding go away right now. Mm-hmm. It's a really tragic thing. I mean, it's just where we are. So I hope that this doesn't pause a lot of what we are seeing happen, especially in women's health.
So your team is actually trying to push this forward faster. I imagine you're presenting to investors.
Yes.
How many years do you think it is before I'm less confused and we're like, you know, at the press of a button, I understand my body?
I think that 5 years is a good number. Mm-hmm. And especially because of AI. Mm-hmm. And I know some people like it's overhyped, but it's not.
It's not.
It's not. And it's just moving like at lightning speed. And this way to contextualize information and simplify it, like even on a weekly basis, I'm meeting with other startups and what they're doing, how they integrate data into a platform that's been, you know, disconnected. Like you're mentioning before, like I see this doctor here, this doctor. Those are popping up very rapidly. I just saw another startup the other day where they've kind of taken all of the wearables, and it might seem like an easy job, but it's actually not. It's complicated and slow, but they are rapidly doing it, and I'm seeing that happening faster and faster. So I think in 5 years, you're definitely going to be able to see that it's simplified. Now, who's going to benefit from that is a completely different question.
Right. If I have the resources, I can benefit from it.
100%. And also it depends, like in my mind, at a governmental level, like can we handle the crisis of so many people being sick? Mm-hmm. One interesting like sector I'm following is like other countries that have single payer health systems, because even they're now having a difficult time manage like obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure. So they're rapidly trying to change their healthcare system in a weird way. They might actually lead better than us because they can, with a, you know, sweep of a pen, change that system versus the United States that has, you know, you have a lot of different, like, you know, Medicaid, Medicare, commercial insurance, self-pay, you know, a lot of different competing factors.
So before we move to the next phase of our conversation, let's talk about books. Other than the book on your nightstand, which is your own book, tell us what's on your reading list in the wellness space or even like running a business and entrepreneurship.
Oh, good question.
Yes.
You have one that pops out because I'm reading Demon Copperhead right now. I don't know about you guys.
I think I'm kind of reading more like casual books.
Yes.
Anything that eventually turns into a Netflix series, I try to like pat myself that I predicted that. But for me, in terms of like, I've read all of the classic, you know, lean you know, books in terms of entrepreneurship and Malcolm Gladwell and all of those. But I'm trying to think in terms of Eric Topol's coming out with a new book, and then Peter Attia's book. A lot of people have read that. It talks really about the Four Horsemen, which is that breaking it down to like, those are the big things, the big buckets, cardiometabolic, you know, cardiovascular, metabolic, cancer, and neurodegenerative disease. And I do like his style of the way, like his scientific rigor, the way he kind of decides on what he's going to support or not. So I think that his book is a great book, Peter Attia's.
was thinking about any of the habit books, Tiny Habits, Atomic Habits. If you haven't read them, I think it's really important to understand how we are wired as humans, and mm-hmm. and that if you can learn that you are just a supercomputer and you just have a control alt delete, and whatever you do repeatedly, we know this now, about 50% of what we do in a day is literally just on autopilot. So if you mm-hmm. can get in and begin to change that stuff. I also think Mark Hyman does a lot of great stuff, and he's starting some longevity clinics that you can go into. So they're Mark Hyman's a incredible innovator and pioneer in health and wellness and weight and food and all of the rest. He's beginning to open clinics where you would go in and sort of get this sort of end-to-end mm-hmm. care of blood draw and nutrition and supplementation and medication, and really, so they're kind of in that, in your space very much, I think, trying to innovate.
Well, I love this conversation. Let's bring it into a game. Natasha's made us a really fun game around wellness trends. So we see so much popping up on our feeds, right? So this might anger the two of you. Okay. And we want to know, are these actual trends like legit? Like, would you actually participate in these? Are they a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Okay.
So first one, microplastic testing, a do-it-yourself home testing for plastic particles. Would you do that?
I would not.
Okay, and tell me why, Sarah.
I don't think the science is there on that. Okay. So I think that's total hype.
Great, okay. Sure.
And but, I mean, a lot of people will buy it.
I'll just give my two cents of, you know, this is an incredible machine, and mm-hmm. it was built to filter things. Mm.
And we're like a Brita.
We are a Brita. Yes. We have incredible, that's, you know, like we joke in our classes, we get to the sleep pillar, and I always say, like, no more detox diets. Like, we have this incredible yes. detoxification system, and when you go to bed, it takes care of everything. Don't worry about it, just sleep.
Awesome. Okay, next one. Number two, sleep hacking with caffeine. This is a time-delayed caffeine capsule taken at night to aim you to get out of bed with zero grogginess. Will you do this, Liz?
Absolutely not.
Sarah?
Will not do that.
Okay, no. Liz, tell us why.
Oh my God. Caffeine is the biggest sleep disruptor that you could even imagine. My coaching every single day is to drop as much possible out of your life as you can. If you can get it to a small amount in the morning upon waking, that is the only time I would recommend it.
I know some people in this field, and it's actually not true. Like, it can't happen to us. And they've actually spent a ton of money.
Wait, do you tell these people to their face that...
No, they told me. They were like, we can't figure out the science of terms of making it like the delayed capsule. Yeah, they were like, we can't do that.
Yeah. Okay. So this is all hype.
It's all hype.
It's but really I'm not saying like, it might not be in the future.
It's a wish, right?
It's like...
Just right now, I would...
You really have to look at the scientific teams behind these products mm-hmm. to see if they're really doing research. Mm-hmm. And like, what is that? Because if you dig down deep, sometimes it's like done on like 8 rats. You know, it's right. like, we're not a rat. So like, I'm always like, oh, I love this until I read it was only done on 10 people.
Yeah, right.
And then I'm like, I'm not taking that.
I guess, why can't I just use the alarm? Like, why do I need to take the capsule?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, next one. Intermittent fasting. Liz.
I love it.
Okay, Sarah.
I would agree.
Okay, Liz, why?
We overeat incredibly in this new environment that we live in, that too. So for me, it's all been about marketing. You know, one of the chapters in my book, I said, like, 50% of research says that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And 50% of the research says, don't eat breakfast. So you've got to really hack your own feelings, your own energy levels, mm-hmm. see, does it work for you? What I find is intermittent fasting, if you can get out of the headset that in between these hours, it's magical and you can have 14 packs of Oreos.
Yes.
It's not magical. Mm-hmm. You should eat a small amount, healthy foods, fruits and vegetables, lean proteins, healthy fats. You should not eat past fullness. Guys, you can go 30 days with no food. Okay. You can't go 2 days with no water. We're overeating. Mm-hmm. And what I find intermittent fasting does is allow the body to actually get through all of the food that has been consumed, mm-hmm. get to that space where the systems can actually detox themselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think it has to be 16:8 or, right? And people get all hooked up on that. Like, okay, it's an ish. If it was 17:5, I don't care, whatever. Like,
are you talking about number of hours?
The number of hours, mm-hmm. what you should really work on what feels good for you. And then if you end up at this beautiful brains meets beauty, and you have a little snack at the lunch a little earlier than you planned, don't beat yourself up. No guilt, no shame, because now we all learned guilt and shame. Highlight the reward system. You're going to leave here and go get, like, midnight cookies or whatever it is, right? So I love it. I just love it for
people. Okay, Sarah, tell me why.
No, I would agree. What we said, I do like it for all the reasons that Liz pointed out, but I would just be leery of, like, I think that you have to think about these things that, like, when you mention the word hacking, it's like, what are you trying to hack and at what age? Because maybe if you're older and trying to do this, like, it's not a good idea. And so just in the context of, like, the other things you're trying to solve at that time. And also, like, you have to be, what are the risks to your body at that time? Like, if somebody's doing that and they're older and, like, they become hypoglycemic and fall and hit their head, like, how did that help you?
Right.
So just thinking of it that way.
Okay. So, Sarah, we'll start with you on this one. Continuous monitoring devices, watches or rings, yes or no?
Oh, I love those. Yes. But ones that are well validated. So, you know, when they first came out, a lot of them had intravariability and people are making decisions on this. That's why doctors don't always adopt a lot of this stuff, because at the end of the day, they're making a clinical recommendation. So I see why they're leery, but there's a lot of good data now coming out that they are, you know, predictive, they're accurate consistently. So I love anything that helps people measure so that they can, you know, look at that and say, like, I'm not sleeping as well as I thought I was. And then maybe you realize, like, that's why you're snacking or why you're irritable or not exercising. So if it can help you to kind of reset, love wearables, love continuous glucose monitoring, I think that a lot more people are going to lean into that. I'm hoping, like, all of these sensors become, like, lighter, easier to use. I think any entrepreneurs out there, make them prettier. I mean, let's face
make
it.
Make the interface easier to understand why is this happening to me.
So Liz, are you on board with these devices?
Oh, I love them. As I say, I built a box that people get with all this stuff in it, because, and then we made it all work together. So you could see, oh my God, look, when I sleep better, I do. I eat better. I move more. Wow.
Yeah.
To make that interconnectivity is really where we go next.
Okay, I'm going to give us two more. This one's fun. Parasite cleanse. Sarah, yes or no?
I don't really know anything about it and don't want to. I'm going to say no. I'm just going to say a hard no.
I'm going to say a hard no, and I don't really know what it is. I'm just like, no, that can't be.
Yeah. Okay, last one.
So the answer is no.
So, hard no. Pre-alcohol drinks to prevent a hangover. Liz, is this a yes or a no?
I'm going to say yes, not for the reason that you think I'm going to say yes. If you drink a drink before you drink a drink, it pushes back the drink. So you drink less.
I like that idea.
You mean, like, I fill my belly with something else?
It takes time. Yeah. You're, like, at the party or, like, swishing your little drink. Maybe an hour goes by that you don't have any alcohol, which is maybe going to cut you down by at least one drink that night, maybe two. I think that's what's occurring. So hydration as well. I think you're just hydrating yourself pre-taking in the alcohol. I know that they have a whole bunch of potassium, magnesium, sodium, all the types of electrolytes are in there and things like that. I think it's more about delaying the first drink.
Okay, Sarah?
I would agree, because I feel like you're trying to make a conscious decision to cut down. So, like, if you're doing that, I would support that. My only question would be, like, where is this product being made? And I just think about my days at Thorne, where we made sure that all of our ingredients were from the highest quality and that we tested them three times in the process. And they had the highest level of NSF certification. So you really want to, when you buy these products, like, find out where they're manufacturing, where they're importing things, and are they doing proper testing?
I love this. Well, what I want to say about this conversation is I have both of you on text message. Like, I can message you anytime
you
I ask any
pocket.
Question.
Yeah.
And definitely. I feel like everyone listening wishes that they have that access to you, because you both are so amazing. Thank you for contributing today.
Absolutely. Had a great time. Thank you so much, Jody.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jody Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.